there, beautiful people. Welcome back to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am journalist, editor, authoress times two, Travell Anderson.
And I'm the oh-so-cozy but scared to be breathing through my nosy when I get to Las Vegas, Jared Hill. Welcome back to Fanti. Listen, we're going to be talking about conventions and conferences because... Well, Travell and I are at a conference this week, and we'll talk to you a little bit more about that. But, like, I am anxious about it because we're in convention season, and just, like, being in communication with so many people over the next few weeks makes me a little bit anxious. We'll talk about that. But I'm just going to move on because there's something we need to really discuss. We're going to do this past the popcorn conversation, and it's going to really be past the papas. Okay, we're talking about the potato moment that happened on this show last week. I was deeply offended, number one, by the way that you came at me for my potato preference.
Wow.
But then to see the shocking, the horrifying amount of backlash that I received as a person who enjoys a tater tot, I just thought it was too much. There were a few people, though, that spoke up and spoke up for what was right. And I just want to say, I see y'all and I appreciate you.
Here's the thing. Okay. I said it on the show. I'll say it again. A tater tot is not a fry. Okay. We can have a conversation about tater tots that we can do. I'm all right with that, Dream. We can do that.
You know,
we could talk about Sonic tater tots.
You know what?
We could talk about the tater tots out of the frozen section in the store.
I knew that you might come at me with this type of bullshit today. I just put a tweet into the chat from one of our friends, Dino Ray Ramos. Shout out to Dino. And Dino has a podcast that both Travell and I have both been on called Problematic Fave. Go check it out. About the when you love a show, but like there's something really like weird about it or something that doesn't age well. It's a problematic fave.
It's called fave. It's obvious. Y'all know what that means.
but Dino has this tweet, which was a graphic, like a meme, that said, what are the top three types of fries? The top three types of fries offer standard, waffle, crinkle, tater tot, curly, sweet potato, steak, smiley, which is weird, and home fries. I just wanted to get back to the fourth one on that list that said the tater tot. I don't want to just let it go. But guess what? Go ahead.
This image looked like the person who made it live in their mama basement.
Okay, first of all.
And should we be talking to that person about how they define potatoes? No. Okay, a tater tot is not a fry. It just isn't. I don't care what this graphic tells you. It just isn't. And the other tweets you did not pull.
Before you do that, I just want to say... It known. First of all, your speech is like riddled with hate and vitriol because you French fry people are like that. And Big French Fry has you in a chokehold.
Wow, not you French fry people.
Big French Fry has you in a chokehold and I can see it. It shows.
Not Big French Fry, sis.
But like, I just want to acknowledge the person who created this meme or the one that posted, their name is Hologram H and they're a shadowy figure in their Twitter bio photo. So you might have a point.
See?
I do want to point that out.
Listen, I do want to point out,
we've seen a number of people's responses come back in, but like, I wanted to just point out there was one tweet that I thought was just really, really special. It comes from Jeremy, and Jeremy says, you're right about BK versus McDonald's fries, but I'm surprised you didn't mention Taco Bell fries. Have you tried the Taco Bell fries, Travell?
Now, why would I do that? They do tacos. They don't do fries. Like,
yes, but also, you know, Jack in the Box is known for burgers, and their tacos hit. So, you know what I mean?
I don't go to Jack in the Box for tacos. If I want a taco, I'm going to Taco Bell, or I'm going to go to Pink Taco.
Hold on. You've never had the taco at Jack in the Box?
I've never had the taco at Jack in the Box. You want to know the one thing that I have had at Jack in the Box is the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit combo.
Okay.
Because, you know, they do breakfast 24/7.
I mean, Jack in the Box is a national treasure that is not available across the nation. We can talk about that a different day. But I don't want to get too much into the weeds here, but the fact that you haven't had a taco at Jack in the Box, I weep for you. I weep for you. Jeremy might have also said that tater tots are delicious, but they aren't fries. Travell was right. I can't confirm or deny if that was said, but it is what it is.
Fry lives matter.
I want to also move on because we also talked about Beyonce's new album coming out. It came out the day after our episode came out, so it's been kind of sitting in the world for a little while. Travell, thoughts, faves? Like, what are your faves? What's been speaking to you?
The whole album. No skips. And I dare y'all to fight me. I dare you to fight me. No skips. Also, this is one of those experiences that, like, you actually need to listen to it all the way through from beginning to end at least once, right? To allow her artistry as it relates to the transitions to truly be on display, okay? Because when them songs, you just be listening to the song, and then 5 minutes later, you'd be like, girl, is the song still going? Girl, right. You two songs later. You didn't even know you switched
tracks. Yeah, that track was about a minute and a half, sis. We've already moved on and moved on again. No, I fully agree with you. Like,
it's so good.
It made me think about Solange's album, right? Her most recent album that is like very much a vibe that carries throughout. And I think we've kind of seen more and more artists kind of doing that thing. I feel like Drake's album kind of feels like that. And so to hear Beyonce do it in this way, I was like, I have found myself really playing the whole album all the way through just on loop, as opposed to like going to specific songs. I do have some specific songs that I love, and I want to shout out Cozy. I want to shout out Cozy, favorites? Which is track two, because number one, like, it's a bomb ass song. And like, I feel like I want to be wrapped in like a furry blanket and like dancing in the living room kind of thing. Love that song. Every week on this show, you hear us shout out our music and creatives and all of the folks in the credits. And each week you hear us talk about Corey, Cor.ece, wherever you get your Slayworthy audio. Well, this is included in that Slayworthy audio now, because Corey's was one of the producers on Cozy, and we're like really, really proud of him and excited.
One of the writers.
And so, like, just very, very excited for such a significant moment for Corey. So, something else that was interesting to me about Cozy specifically after I'm That Girl was it seems like there is something new about Beyonce's confidence, right? And like, I always think about Beyonce as a confident person that talks about empowerment and all of those kinds of things. But I also wonder, you know, I think about the imposter syndrome a lot. And so I wonder what it is like to actually be her, right? And you are that person that everyone holds as that standard, as like, oh, you know, there's a million different memes about people comparing themselves to you, and you are that person. So it was interesting to me to hear like I'm That Girl and then Cozy talking about being comfortable in my skin. It made me wonder like what was new about that for her nowadays, as opposed to like the older version of her or the younger version of her, I would say.
Well, you know, the streets are saying that Cozy is actually like a pro trans, you know, anthem of sorts, because that is the song that has a clip from T.S. Madison is interpolated. I always use interpolated, and I'm sure I've been using it wrong, but a clip from T.S. Madison is part of the song. And then that's the song that Honey Dijon is one of the producers on. For those who don't know, Honey Dijon is like a legendary, iconic Black trans woman in house music. And Carice has done previous work with Honey Dijon as well. So I believe that's how, you know, he got, you know, involved in this project. But that's what the streets are saying.
Interesting.
You know, so just some added context to that particular track in particular.
I also love Cuff It. Yes. Because Cuff It like starts like a new act in the album. Absolutely. And like I feel like there's a few different acts that happen in this one album, right? Like that one thing concludes and then like three or four songs go together, and Cuff It starts like a new mood, and I love that. My last one that I'm like certainly like on the freeway with is Move, right? I love Move Out the Way. How many times I'm gonna say it? Like, I love that shit.
Period. Move gives, and I do not mean this as a negative, although I know the girls will take it this way. Move gives the gift reject. right? So like if it, because it's that same Afrobeats ish you know, situation. And I don't mean reject as in the song is bad. I mean it just reminded me of the sound that she was giving us on that particular album. And I think it goes very well with, you know, the experience that is this particular album. So that's a great song. You know, my favorite is Church Girl for obvious reasons. Shout out to Twinkie Clock.
So okay. Good.
For her sample. Okay. I like Summer, what is it? Summer Renaissance? Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called, I believe? That's a good one. Plastic on the Sofa. That bitch is singing on Plastic on the Sofa, motherfucker. Like, she's singing her, she do her good singing, okay? Put her thoke all up in that song, okay? I will say, I was one of those people who did listen to The Leak, okay? I did listen to The Leak, you know, before, you know, the day before it came out. I had to do it for research purposes. But this is what I will say. It sounds different officially, okay? Because I listened to The Leak version, okay? And I was like, oh, this is cute or whatever. You know, and then... But I didn't listen to it. I didn't listen to it like all the way through. So that first time, like when it came out, I was sitting on my couch. I said, let's put it on the album. Let's put it on all the way through. And baby, it changed my life. It's a really good album. Y'all know we Beyonce stands over here. We can go on and on and on and on talking about her. But we got a whole show to get to.
We do have a whole show to get to. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about conferences and conventions. For those of you that have been to a lot of them, you will relate. And for those of you that have not, we're going to introduce you to a whole new world, bitch. Come on. Fanta's coming right back. Comfortable in my skin, cozy. I don't know about y'all, but you've probably heard about microdosing if you listen to this show more than once or twice. If not, know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and to perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, Travel, I want to know, what is your weed strategy for convention this week? Go quickly.
Oh, period. You know I got me some gummies on deck, honey, because it's going to help me get through. It's going to help me get through dealing with all these people. It also might help you, you know, with a little bit of that anxiety that you talked about. Okay.
Oh, baby.
So, you know.
Baby.
Don't try.
Let me tell you, the weed plan is strong for this weekend, for this week of convention. I probably shouldn't. I mean, it's out here now. But I love the microdose gummies, and my friends have really loved them as well. And if you're interested, microdose is available nationwide. So to learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com, code FANTI.
Welcome back, beautiful people. As you all know, Jared and I are very involved in a number of professional associations, okay? And this week, actually, as you're hearing this, we are both in Las Vegas, as Jared said, at the annual NABJ convention, which this year is a joint one with NAHJ. I should say, I guess, for the people who don't know, NABJ is the National Association of Black Journalists, okay? NAHJ is the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. But this period of the summer is what those of us engaged in these types of professional associations call convention season. Last week was AAJA in Los Angeles. That's the Asian American Journalists Association. Jared was on a couple panels. I popped my head in and out, you know, as a representative of NABJ. This September will be NLGJA, which is the LGBTQ Journalists Association. They're going to be in Chicago. ONA, which is the Online News Association, will also be in September. That's back in LA. So many conferences, so little time. As I said, we are in Vegas for NABJ, NAHJ, which we thought made this week the perfect time to give conferences like these the Fanti treatment. We know that many of y'all have various conventions in your field. The academics be having them, the doctors be having them, hell, the sex workers be having them, all right? The structure of many...
Is there a convention?
Yeah, they be having the expos and the stuff. I be seeing stuff on the line. Anyway, the structure of many of these conventions and conferences are fairly similar, right? There are panel discussions and plenary sessions, exhibition and career fairs, workshops and receptions. So we figured some of y'all might be able to weigh in as well based on you all's experience. But to get us started, Jarrett, I want you to go back into the depths of your hippocampus, your medulla oblongata, if you will, and tell us, what do you remember being like your first or one of your first like convention or conference experiences?
I'm going to dig out my cerebellum and shimmy over
girl,
to the
might need to give you a lobotomy,
stem.
Honey. Where's girl, Nurse Ratchet when you need her?
I think my first like conference-y experience that I can remember, at least, because I don't know that this is right, was 2009-ish. I went to the Clinton Global Initiative. They have a university side that is focused on, you know, college students. And so I went to what they call CGIU, Clinton Global Initiative University. And so that was, I don't even remember all of the details of that. Like, it was in Austin. The story that I always remember is having gone with my best friend, Michael Brewer, who works over in the Senate right now as a comms director for Raphael Warnock. We went together, and like, I remember being on like these huge bleachers in this big like gymnasium kind of thing at the school. And Bill Clinton was like coming across and shaking people's hands, and he was all the way on the other side of the room. And like, people were freaking the fuck out about Bill Clinton. And I was like, y'all, it is not that big a deal. Like, y'all are doing a whole lot.
They probably didn't want no stains on their blue dresses.
I have a deep hate for you, just so you know. But like, I was there, and like, it was, as he got closer and closer, like, everyone was like getting more and more riled up, and like, I started getting more and more excited. And like, I was like, I mean, it is kind of cool that's Bill Clinton. And then it got closer, and it was like, oh my God, that's Bill Clinton. And then you got here, and I was like, oh my God, Mr. Clinton! Like, I was excited like everyone else was.
I can't.
And now I'm like, who was I in that moment? The really interesting thing about this story, though, is Michael was a big Hillary Clinton fan back in the day. And so all of the people are meeting Bill Clinton at this conference, and Bill is like, you know, accepting all of that. But then Michael is like, oh my God, I love your wife. And Bill goes, me too. Like, you know, it was a fun time. It was like a really fun experience that I remember like vague pieces of, but like that was always the moment that I remember.
This is while you were in undergrad.
Yeah, this was in, while I was in undergrad in Austin, Texas. It was my first time going to Austin.
Okay.
What about yours?
For me, I'm actually not sure when was my first like experience. By which I mean like the professional association type of convention conference. Because I used to go, when I was in high school, I was in Model United Nations. I've told this story before. So I would go to like those competitions, which I think we would consider them conferences or whatever. But they were competitions. They weren't like networking, you know, career related type stuff.
I did those kinds of things in high school too, but competitive things like that, which kind of feels similar.
In a way, yeah. But I feel like for like the traditional professional association style of conference convention. So two things come to mind. NCORE comes to mind, which is like, what does that stand for? National Conference on Race and Ethnicity in Higher Education, I believe. In undergrad, I was part of this like program, this like diversity program or whatever. And we did a presentation about the program. There were like two representatives from each of these like four different HBCUs, if I'm not mistaken. And we would like all come together throughout the summer and like talk about, I don't know, diversity shit, I guess. And then we had to present on it at the convention. And then, so it's that one that comes to mind. And then also in undergrad, Creating Change, which is like one of the like big LGBTQ ones. Myself and a couple other, I think, RAs, like Black, Queer, and Trans RAs from Morehouse. I think we did a panel or a presentation or something at Creating Change. But like those are my first kind of introductions to kind of the conference ecosystem, if you will, the expectations, which I'm sure we will get into, of like how you are supposed to like move into these particular spaces. And so I guess this is a good time for us to jump straight into the fan part of this. And I will say, like, I guess people say that the reason why you go to these conventions is for the networking, right? It's for, if you're looking for a job, you can, you know, hopefully make a connection here at like NABJ, right? That will like lead to your next job, or maybe it would lead to two or three jobs down the road. And so I feel like even my first few times coming here, the emphasis was always on, do you have your card? Do you have copies of your resume? Are you going to the career fair? Or if you're going to be hanging out around the bar, you need to be like trying to, you know, cozy up with, you know, whoever the EVP is at whatever fucking company. And so I feel like networking is always a big thing that like folks really enjoy or like looked forward to, I guess I should say, at convention. I'd say for me, though, the best thing I've ever kind of taken away from these conventions is like the opportunity to meet these like quote unquote big names, right? Like whether it is, I remember, I think my first NABJ conference, I think, was that NABJ? But like meeting April Ryan at NABJ when she was hot shit, you know? I mean, she's still hot shit now, but you know, when she was having that moment, or Nicole Hannah-Jones as well, right? Like these people who we have uplifted in our journalism industry, Don Lemon, Robin Roberts.
So 2016 was my first NABJ, and like my first time going to it was as good an experience as anyone could probably ask for.
That's because you were VIP, hun.
Well, right, exactly. So like that year in 2016, it was a month after the Melania Trump plagiarism story broke. The national organization had invited me to come. The president of the organization gave me their suite to stay in, right? And like, it was bananas. Like, it was a wild experience, but like one of the best experiences that I've ever had, easily the best experience I've ever had at a conference. But like, it was kind of surreal to me that it was all happening. And like, I was having so much imposter syndrome around like being called a journalist and me not having called myself that. And you know, we talked about that here before.
Shout out to the folks who were at Max FunCon. If you were at Max FunCon, you know that whole story. Okay, because we did our little presentation, you know, for the people at Max FunCon, okay? But yeah, so Jared, what for you, what do you like, what do you enjoy about conventions and conferences?
There's this conversation that I know we have at NABJ, and I haven't seen it really at other conventions, that there is a familial aspect of NABJ that is undeniable for a lot of folks, right? Even if you don't love everybody, right? Even if people get on your fucking nerves and all that kind of shit, like there is something about it that feels like really familial. And I think a lot of people always reference it as feeling like a family reunion every year, and like seeing all the people that you either worked with or know someone that worked with or saw from that the convention every year. And so I really appreciate that element of it, because I kind of rolled my eyes like family reunion, but now it's like, we haven't seen each other in 3 years. And now it's like, I'm excited to see a lot of these people. And it does kind of feel like a family reunion. Since we haven't seen each other since Miami. So, well, air quotes around Miami. But yeah, it wasn't.
Right. Turnberry, J.W. Turnberry. We weren't in no fucking Miami. They played us, honey.
The other thing I feel like I appreciate is conferences tend to have like a lot of definitive moments for people, right? They're like, oh, I met so-and-so at the conference and that's how I got my job. Or, oh, I met my best friend at the conference. We were sitting in a panel, or those kinds of things.
Have you had one of those moments? Like, do you feel like you've had like a transformative moment at NABJ or SPJ or, you know, one of these other conventions?
I think that my convention experience is so uniquely different, especially with NABJ, because of the way that I was introduced to it, that I don't think I'm ever going to see it quite the same as everybody else. And like, I've had a lot of moments where like I've met someone and we have now known each other for years, right? I built a lot of relationships at NEBJ. As a freelancer, it's been really helpful to meet people that also freelance or that are on the corporate side and things like that. And those becoming, you know, expansions of my network, that has probably been like the transformative nature of something like an NABJ for me, because it's really kind of developed and helped shape like the path that I was on. Have you had like a moment like that yourself?
I absolutely have not.
Oh, no.
Which is something, I mean, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Everybody's not going to have that experience. But I also think, you know, in... we'll get there shortly, right, about the qualms that I have with some of these conventions and conference experiences, because you're right that a lot of folks do talk, specifically in NABJ, but like with any of these conventions, I've heard, you know, similar stories from ONA. I've heard similar stories from, you know, some of the student development, you know, conferences that folks have done before. And so a lot of people do have these like wondrous moments that end up, you know, turning into amazing things for their career. I have not had that, but we gonna get into why shortly. I know you have okay. One more point.
The thing that I don't hear enough people talk about is like the debauchery of conventions and conferences, right? Like, or even competitions or other things that starts with the letter C and O. But like, I feel like somehow it is like a wild time where, honey, things are going down, right? And like, I'm always fascinated by
what does that mean? You talking about people fucking each other?
I wish I could see your face and the lips first. I mean, yes. Like, I mean, I've gotten it in at conventions. Like,
I bet you have. Especially you was VIP that first year. I'm sure you did, honey.
No comment. We ask you to respect our privacy at this critical time. I think we should get into the anti. How about we keep it pushing?
Well, now you want to get into the anti. Fine, let's get into the anti. You want to jump ship so bad. But we should note that similar to your point about the family reunion of it all, people do build these like long lasting connections with folks, and sometimes it do turn into, you know, you have the booty call type relationships, but you also have people who met their partners, you know, mm-hmm. their long time partners at these conventions, you know. And so like, shout out to y'all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not mad at it. Get y'all's lives. Okay, on the anti side, Travelle, you have some feels about respectability that I feel like are really good.
Well, I just feel like, I mean, maybe this is a little different for the, you know, the sex workers convention and whatnot, but...
I mean, maybe not.
Maybe not. I wouldn't know, honey. But I always feel like at all of the professional association-related conventions and conferences, right, there are all these expectations, these mores that, like, we all are supposed to follow, whether that's in terms of how you dress, whether that's in terms of the type of shoes you wear, whether that's in terms of, is your face... You got your makeup did or you don't. You got your good weave in or you don't, you know. But also in terms of like, you know, how you are supposed to carry oneself when you are in the convention space or whatever. And so for me, this is what I was talking about earlier when we were talking about like how I feel like I haven't been able to have that like quintessential convention going experience, particularly at NABJ, but also at every other convention that I've gone to, because of how I show up in those spaces, mm-hmm. you know. And instead of, you know, people perhaps trying to like, you know, care about what I might be able to bring to their team, you know, they worried about which bathroom I'm going into, you know, mm-hmm. or they, you know, they not even gonna look at the resume because they bumbling and fumbling over fucking they them pronouns, you know, like very, you know, rudimentary type of things. But we also see
they're
this
not looking you in the face because they're looking at your braids,
absolutely, or my nails or my heels, you know, whatever the case may be. But I also see we've also seen this like manifest in spaces for like. Like here at NABJ, for example, there's always these conversations about like how the broadcasters should be dressing. Is your dress too short? Is it too tight? You know, should you have on that 3-piece suit with the tie? No tie. Is that okay? Could you just do some slacks? You know, all of these like different expectations of how folks are supposed to comport themselves and whatnot that ultimately end up changing, I think, one's particular experience if you don't, you know, for whatever reason, or can't, for whatever reason, subscribe to those particular ways of going about it. I can go on and on and on about, you know, just the lack of inclusivity in all, I would go as far as saying all of the professional organizations that I am a member of, and I am a member, a dues-paying member of many of them, as well as the other conventions and conference experiences that I've gone to, they're just deeply, they deeply lack inclusivity. And I mean that in a multi-layered way, right? If it's a white organization, I'm talking about race. If it's a queer organization, I'm also talking about race more often than not. You know, if it's a black organization or a brown organization, I'm talking about LGBTQ plus inclusion. I'm talking about disability inclusion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? All of these organizations have work to do, and we end up finding more often than not that, like, actually, I will say the most inclusive place that conference that I've been to, and it was a queer conference, was Creating Change, but this was also during the period in which the black girls and the brown girls were like, oh, we tired of y'all pushing us to the motherfucking side, okay? And so they were, like, taking over and doing, like, if I'm not mistaken, the first year I went there, there was a literal protest by black folks who were attending the convention, and, you know, kind of pushing back against the leadership at that time. But anyway, I'm rambling. But, like, that's ultimately what a lot of my contention with these spaces, where it kind of falls.
Can I ask you to stay here for just a second?
Sure.
I'm intrigued because what year was your first national?
Of NABJ?
Yeah.
2016.
I'm fascinated to see that, like, you have not had the what you call quintessential, like, conference experience, but immediately got involved in leadership, right, at the local level, and then moved up to the national level. What has that been for you? Like, what has driven that for you?
Well, you've heard this story before, but the LA chapter meeting that we had immediately after convention that year, you were there. Xavier Higgs was president at the time. He Skyped in two people, like a national staff member, if I believe, and then a national board member. The national board member, I guess I won't say his name, but they don't listen to this podcast anyway. But the national board member, they solicited our feedback. I gave my feedback and I told them how exclusionary I found the experience to be, how it was not supportive of me and my journey and a variety of other things, how cliquish NABJ in particular, but also many of these other convention spaces are. And he told me that if I had a problem with something, then I need to get involved and fix it. Now, I happen to like running toward challenges. I mean, by like, I mean hate, but I do it anyway. And so that's how I got involved. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. And now I'm a board member of this organization and currently running for a second term, although I'm running unopposed. So praise the Lord for me. But it's like that tiring, thankless work. We did a whole episode on like community service, right? And like this kind of goes attached to that. But like I got involved in the ways that I got involved because I wanted to have that family reunion experience. I wanted to have that definitive moment that, you know, I met a great mentor at NABJ and they set me on the path to success, right? Because that's what we were told NABJ could be and was for so many people. So I got involved to try to make that space possible for me. Yeah. And so it still has not happened, but, you know, success is in her blood. So it, you know, she's doing just fine without it. But like, that's how I got as involved as I am in this organization and steadily, right, pushing up against everything that I dislike about the convention experience. In my role as a board member, I've been trying to, you know, put things in place to tweak some of those things, to make it feel less exclusionary if it's your first time, to make trans people, queer people, gender nonconforming people feel like they can bring their full selves to NABJ specifically, but also, you know, you and I are on panels for whether it's SPJ or AAJA or ONA, and we do a lot of those things for free, may I add, because we are trying to, right, make those spaces what we need and want them to be. I will step off of my soapbox and let you go.
I'm not mad at the soapbox, friend. That was really real. Like, I feel like we hear so many different kinds of stories of people that go to conventions and have, you know, myriad different experiences. And honestly, I think about the work that you and I do even together within ABJLA and how we've been working on bringing programming to our chapter and to the city, and like how challenging it is to think about like, how do we make sure everyone feels included and welcome and like all of those things. And so as I hear you talking about that, it makes me think about how many people will hear that and relate to it and know like, oh, someone else knows what that felt like, because I've gone to a million conventions or I've gone to a million conferences or competitions or whatever and not felt embraced or not felt seen or not felt included. So I fully respect that. I would say for me, I always feel like, even just like from a practical standpoint, even not about the experience, but partially about that, is there's too much content at conferences sometimes, where it's like there's way too much shit to do and you can't even pick what you would really want to do. And because there's so many options, it feels like there's nothing, right? Like, I don't even know what to do. And like, then you're in an enormous hotel oftentimes. I feel like when we were in Detroit for our convention there, that building was difficult to navigate and understand. And you're like trying to get from one end of the building to the other end, to a different floor, under in the basement, at the thing, at the such. And like,
wait until you get here, honey.
Listen, Caesar's Palace, I know, is an enormous complex. And so that is one of the things that can be, you know, a little bit confusing. And then things changing in real time and all of those different things. I also feel like going to conventions is something that is incredibly cost prohibitive and like does not make it a space for people that could really use that kind of space. It does not make itself available to those kinds of people. Oftentimes it is so expensive to go to these things. It's also very expensive to put them on, right? So like, to put on a convention costs a lot of money, a lot of person power, you know, requires a lot of time and energy and resources and networking. But it's also incredibly expensive to go to. And I always think about how much money it costs. And if you don't have a job that's paying for you to go, which, you know, I've never had a job pay for me to go, it's something that, you know, it costs money, right? Like to fly, to put yourself up, to pay for conference registration, to go to events, to be at parties, all of that kind of stuff. Like, it is really expensive. And I think about like, if you're a student that is coming out of college right now, or you're a senior and you're looking for a job, it's like, I always think about how expensive it is for them to be able to attend or to be able to be a part of this space that could really do something for them or really introduce, you know, get them in the room to be able to meet other people. I would say the last thing that my anti would probably include for me this year specifically is like the pandemic anxiety, because even like going out to a bar or a club with friends here in the last, you know, year or so, like a handful of times that I've done that, even because it's not my vibe. But like,
I'm about to say, where was my invite?
Like the very few times I've done something like that, I've had real anxiety about going inside and like have stayed outside or gone in for a few minutes and like come outside, because like, where people are huddled around in a small space, no mask, masks on or not, like I've started to feel a real anxiety around that I did not expect, even in the last few weeks. And I'm thinking that about being in Caesar's Palace or any convention space, because I was at AAJA this past week. You talked about, you know, ONA and NLGJA and a whole bunch of other J's and A's. But like, it's concerning to me.
Most of the conventions, like the journalism ones, they have quote unquote mandated mask wearing as we're looking mm-hmm. at the different numbers. I don't know how AAJA was for you when you got there, but when I was there, everybody was masked, you know, and it was not a problem.
Well, it's not even about people wearing masks or not. For me, it's about like, masks are not 100%. And if this many people are in this room, like that kind of thing, and like how many people know they have COVID or don't, like that's part of the way my anxiety is set up is like starting to like see.
Well, what
it
kind
in the
of
room.
Mask you got on? You might need to get you an N95, hun. Cause all I do is medical grade, honey.
Honey, she said, I only give medical grade. It's not even that. It's so many things. And like, then you take it off and you're eating and you're inside. Like, that my anxiety is really wrapped up in a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, and in here at NABJ, I don't know if we've said this already, but listeners, I'm already, as we're recording, I'm already in Vegas. Jared will be here later in the week. But like NABJ, we're going to be requiring masks and some social distancing at our events, but at Caesar's, you know, ain't no, it's not the when the city lifted its mask mandate, which was back in March or April or whatever, whenever I was here last with the board, that's when they stopped, you know, policing mask wearing. So, I mean, while there are some people here who have it on, most people don't have it on. And so, you know, if you are going to like conventions right now in the pandemic, like I think that's a concern for everyone, right? And like some people have decided not to go. And so, like, I think that makes plenty of sense for sure.
Yeah. I also am thinking, like, with everyone wearing masks, I'm like, I already have a hard time putting names with faces. Like, I'll recognize your face, but not be able to remember, like, how I met you right away. And then you want to cover up half the person's face. And, like, that's going to be a challenge. But overall, I'm really excited about it.
You know, pandemic anxiety, I think we all are navigating that in a variety of different ways, and it shows up differently, right? In a space that's supposed to be a family reunion, right? Mm-hmm. In a space that is supposed to be, you know, and particularly because we haven't seen each other in 2 years, in person at least. But, you know, I think overall though, as we wrap this idea of like, you know, talking about conventions in this particular space. I mean, there's always like positives and negatives, I guess, with everything that we do on this show, hence the name of the show, Fanti.
I will also say, like, for the members of our organization and for the folks who are friends of our organization here in ABJLA, we're going to be doing a reception on Thursday night, the day this episode is coming out. So check our social media for more information on that, because it'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a cool thing that we're working out. So make sure to check out social media and ABJLA official for that. So.
All righty, we are going to take a break. We want to hear from y'all. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on the Twitters, the Instagrams, and the TikToks at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we will get into your listener feedback and our dishonorable mentions. We'll be right back.
I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller.
9 years ago, we started a podcast to try and learn something new every episode.
Things have gone a little off the rails since then. Tune in to hear about
low-stakes neighborhood drama,
gardening,
the sordid, nasty underbelly of the horse girl lifestyle,
hot sauce,
addiction to TV, and sweaty takes on celebrity culture,
and the weirdest, grossest stuff you can find on Wikipedia.org.
We'll read all of it, no matter how gross. There's something for everyone on our podcast, Baby Geniuses.
Hosted by us, two horny adult idiots.
Hang out with us as we try and fail to retain any knowledge at all.
Every other week on Maximum Fun. Baby Geniuses, tell us
something we don't know. Hey there, quick favor to ask. Will you help us out by taking a 5-minute survey at MaximumFun.org/survey? As you know, most of the support for Max Fun comes directly from folks like you, but many of our shows and our network also rely on limited advertising for some revenue. This survey helps us attract advertisers that are a good fit for the audiences of our shows, and it helps many of our hosts secure a bit of extra income. It should only take a few minutes to complete, and you'll get a discount at Max Fun Store when you do. That's MaximumFun.org/survey. Thanks.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to jump right on into our listener feedback segment. This, I had to go down in the valley, okay, where the girls get naked to pull this email from JB. And it's actually responding to, I believe, a rant that you did back on the show, maybe a couple months ago at this point. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would be really interesting to bring up. I'll read it from JB. It says, I love Jarrett's rant at the beginning of the show. I think you were spot on with how conservatives have been convinced of a completely alternate reality. And I want to give my disclaimer that I am registered to and plan on voting and have been involved in electoral politics on and off. I've worked on a number of progressive ballot initiatives and campaigns, but like Travel, I was struck by Jarrett's comment about, quote, not enough people are talking about this. And I think that's not really the issue. The issue is the people who we need to talk about it aren't talking about it. At this point, the Justice Department is the only democratic method for combating the authoritarian laws taking place in Florida and other states. The people who support these candidates have decided they'd rather have their values enforced through authoritarian means rather than try to complete to compete democratically. However, since we have someone in the White House who is either too out of touch or simply too weak to do anything about it, we have little recourse. We put a Democrat in the Oval Office and it hasn't stopped the rise of fascism in this country. I think what you both and those of us on the left are dancing around is that, quote, not enough people talking about this actually means what the fuck do we have to do? And the answer is getting frighteningly close to violent rebellion. Well, hold on now. Maybe I'm paranoid, but a recent Yale study showed that there was a net zero correlation between public opinion and public policy, so I don't feel I'm too far off. Just my rant. Thanks for reading. JB also had a postscript, I believe that's what we call PSs, reminding us that they were the person from a number of months ago when we talked about gun ownership among communities of color. They were the person telling us all to get strapped up.
Oh, well, all right. JB, to your comment, like, when I say I don't think enough people are talking about this, I always try to be clear that, like, I don't hear enough people talking about this because I can't make a statement about not enough people are talking about this, right? And I do think those things are distinctly different. I will also say that as we kind of continue to see, like, the pandemic grow over time, as we've seen, like, hearings happen in the Senate and, in the House after January 6th, like, it is more and more clear, like, as you lay out evidence, as you can craft narrative and all of those different things, the people who care about this, they already know how they feel about it, right? And the people who don't, I've not seen enough that people are really shifting their positions on this. But as you talk about public opinion and public policy, even that is interesting in a time where Roe v. Wade just fell and, like, a majority of Americans support, you know, Roe v. Wade. And we think about how many times we've seen a president of the United States who was elected to office but did not win the popular vote, two in our lifetime, George W. Bush in 2000 and Donald Trump in 2016. The way that we see how the Supreme Court is made up of, you know, three people who have been put on there that are by a president who did not win a popular vote. So it's not about public opinion or even public representation so much as it is about power and, right, who has it and who's willing to wield it. I could go on about that all day, but I do get annoyed when people are talking about we need to have a national conversation about something. And I always feel like, no, we actually need to be doing some national action around something as opposed to having conversation. But I do think conversation really kind of starts.
Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede.
Now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or for their stupid. Travelle, what you got?
I just have one honorable mention. This is going to an icon who transitioned, you know, back in the day in the church house. We didn't say people died. We say they transitioned. You can't say that no more.
I was going to say it means a whole different thing nowadays.
It means a whole different thing.
Call it what it is.
But Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek fame transitioned to the other side over the weekend. She was legendary and iconic in her own right. You all know her as Lieutenant Uhura on the Star Treks. We're going to play a quick clip, okay? In this clip, Nichelle Nichols is in Will Shatner's arms. There's some alien people or whatever about to force them to kiss. And this is what you're going to hear, okay?
I'm thinking of all the times on the Enterprise when I was scared to death. I would see you so busy at your command. And I would hear your voice from all parts of the ship. And my fears would fade. And now they're making me tremble. But I'm not afraid. I am not afraid.
Now, some quick facts in case you just did not know, because I did not know that Nichelle Nichols participated in what I believe was the first interracial kiss on television with William Shatner. She took one for the team and kissed William Shatner.
It's funny because the way that is recorded in history is as him taking one for the
team. And so that was the scene that you just heard. The scene right before that kiss is what you just heard. So that's one little tidbit. And then another tidbit I learned when I was on my other podcast, What a Day, available weekdays, okay, at 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, wherever you get Slayworthy audio, was that it was super important to have a Black woman in, like, positions of authority on television. So important that when Nichelle Nichols wanted to leave the show after the first season of Star Trek. Apparently, a one Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. personally convinced her to not leave the role.
I mean, how do you say no after that?
I mean, come on now. When he's telling you that you got to stay on the TV for the movement, for the people, for the culture...
She might have said what I've been saying lately. Listen, I ain't giving my whole life to the movement, nigga. I'll do one more.
Okay. But
I'll do one more season. I want to give a quick honorable mention that I meant to give a couple of weeks ago and forgot. I just wanted to acknowledge like the change of the suicide prevention hotline. The 800 number that people have always known will remain in effect because it is a song. It is all kinds of different things.
It's a song. What's the song?
It's the number. What's the guy... is it Logic?
Oh, yeah, the rapper. Well, I think it was a rapper.
Yes. Yeah, it's called 1-800-273-8255, which is the suicide prevention hotline. Oh. But the suicide prevention hotline is now more easily accessed by dialing 988. And that is, you know, for folks here in the States, I don't know how that works around the world. So apologies to our listeners around the world who listen to the show.
I thought you were you said it's a song now and it was a number, so I immediately went to the Blues Brothers. 6-3-4-5-7-8-9. 6-3-4-5-7-8-9.
Oh, so I thought you were about to do 7-7-7-93-11, which is not the same thing.
It's not.
Moving on, it's time for...
Black History is happening every day.
We want to shout out the Shady Rest Golf and Country Club in Scotch Plains that has just joined the National Register of Historic Places. According to tapinto.net in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, the National Park Service has granted the Shady Rest Golf and Country Club, the first African-American country club in the United States, a listing on the National Register of Historic Places. The listing further solidifies Shady Rest as a national landmark among all the building sites and district across the nation, worthy of preservation because of their significance in American history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, and culture. So shout out to John Mooney, who wrote that story. Congratulations to the first African-American country club in the United States getting preserved in that way. That's amazing. Want to let y'all know that Travel and I are on a brand new episode of Nerdette. I think I tweeted this. We have way too serious a conversation about Choco Tacos, and I stand by everything that I said. And considering the conversation we had on this episode and the last about French fries versus tater tots and Fry Lives Mattering, you might care about this Choco Taco conversation. So get on over to Nerdette. Check out that episode.
You just like to fight. That's what this is.
No, we're not fighting on the episode. But we're talking about the Choco Taco disappearing from culture. We're talking about Jordan Peele's new movie, Nope. And we're talking about some Subway sandwich smuggling. And all of that is on the episode of Nerdette with Travel and I. Shout out to Greta. I think this is our second or third time on that show. So it was a really, really funny episode that I was laughing listening back to. If this conversation piqued your interest and you want to get into more of this here,
good.
Welcome back. Check out other episodes that have a related conversation. We have conversations, a few different things. I think the one that you should check out is called Serving is a Habit, where we're talking about community service. It's adjacent to this. If you're not going to go check out that Nerdette episode. We appreciate you so much. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating. Let us know what you think about the show by leaving a review and share the show. Tell a friend about what your favorite episode was. Share it with them. And it will always spark a really great conversation, but you might also be inviting someone else to be a part of the Fantai fam. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fantai Podcast on Instagram and over on Twitter. Use the hashtag Fantai fam as you are chatting at us, and we will jump in and chat back with y'all. You can send us an email to fantai@maximumfun.org. That's fantai@maximumfun.org.
And as always, if you'd like to become a financially contributing member of the Fantai fam, you can do that at maximumfun.org/join. Our music, as always, is brought to you by the one and only Corece. That's Core.ece. Wherever you get Slayworthy audio, also make sure you are streaming his new single with the Beyonce. Okay, the one and only Beyonce. It's called Cozy. But guess But guess what? Fanti did it first, okay? We had him before Beyonce had him.
Listen, years ago, honey. Years ago.
Our graphics, as always, done by the one and only Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative.
Our producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
867-5309. Swish is saying, what does that mean?
867-5309. Yeah!
What is that?
I heard that before. I don't know, but something white.